Hi, this is Bennett Kelly. Thanks for listening to Cyber Law and Business Report. Before you take a recess to hear the latest internet law news and commentary, you are hereby ordered to download the WebmasterRadio.fm mobile app for iPhone and Android. Okay, maybe not ordered, but why not? You can listen live to my show and all our show hosts every day on our live stream or download past episodes with ease. So download the WebmasterRadio.fm mobile app in the iTunes Store or in the Google Play Store. It's an open and shut case.
All rise.
Welcome to the Cyber Law and Business Report. Get the top story on the hot button internet legal topics of the day. This is your home for the latest on internet law and policy. Hear the latest net trends impacting business and have your questions answered right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Now, please welcome your host, the founder of the Internet Law Center, Bennett Kelly.
Good morning. This is Bennett Kelly with the Internet Law Center here in sunny Santa Monica, California, the heart of Silicon Beach. We have a very special show to you today, thanks to the Miami International Book Fair, who was arranged to have some of their guests, their featured authors on our show as guests. And so today we're going to have Pulitzer Prize winning author Doris Kern Goodwin to talk about her new book, The Bully Pulpit. And Goodwin is someone who worked with the Johnson administration when she was just finishing her PhD and became Lyndon Johnson's biographer. And then wrote a series of books, including No Ordinary Time, Franklin and Eleanor Roosevelt, The Home Front in World War II, Wait Till Next Year, The Fitzgeralds and the Kennedys, Lyndon Johnson and the American Dream, and Team of Rivals, The Political Genius of Abraham Lincoln, which was formed the basis of Steven Spielberg's movie that came out last year. So we're joined by her, but also lucky to have give a little balance here. We have Ralph Harrow, who is the chief political columnist for the Washington Times. And he's also just a great guy in general, but he's been in Washington for a number of years, and he's been awarded Conservative Columnist of the Year. And so he's going to offer his perspective on that hallowed office that only 44 men in American history have held. And so we're going to talk about the American presidency today on Cyber Law and Business Report. And we're going to start off with Doris Kearns Goodwin, who we're very pleased to have as a special guest, thanks to the Miami Book Fair. You mentioned in the book that this is something you started 7 years ago, Bully Pulpit. And so that was in 2006 was the kind of the birth of this idea.
That's right. I mean, I think what happened is after I finished Lincoln, and you're searching around for who else do I want to live with after having been with Lincoln for 10 years. There's not a lot of, you know, chances to go back to Millard Fillmore or Franklin Pierce. So I'd always been interested in Teddy Roosevelt. I had done a seminar on him 4 decades ago at Harvard. And the Progressive Era was one of my favorite eras, a time when the country really was trying to at least get closer to its old ideals. So I started with Teddy Roosevelt, and then it morphed into Taft, and it morphed into the Muckraker Journalist. As it, these books take on a life of their own as you go through it.
I guess when I was doing the time frame in my head, I was wondering if there was any external factors going on. You know, 2006 would have been the middle of the Bush administration, the election where the Democrats retook Congress. Was that at all a factor, or it was just more who do you want to live with?
I think it started with who I wanted to live with. The interesting thing is that as I went along, the concerns of our era now have become more replicative of what we were seeing at the turn of the 20th century. You know, a gap between the rich and the poor, the middle class struggling, big companies having so much control, and people feeling like the country needed to have some sort of progressive spirit to keep it going. But that wasn't quite as evident. It was there, obviously, in 06, but it wasn't what originally I thought about, the idea that the time seemed familiar to the 1900s. That became much clearer as I got into it.
That's interesting, because I was wondering if that's what led to choosing it. It's the, okay, let's take a look at the past to give an answer to the future. But that's always the case, I guess.
No, I'd like to believe that. I mean, I think You know, if history means anything, it means that you can study the stories of the people who lived before us and learn, you know, from the struggles and triumphs, or you can look at another era, in this case, an era when, at the start of it, in the Gilded Age, it seemed like, you know, labor unions were diminished and the monopolies were growing and there was no chance of regulating anybody because the old guard Republicans had control of the Congress. And yet, somehow, this thing began bubbling up, partly through the world of journalism, partly through Teddy Roosevelt's leadership, and then it spread to other aspects of society. You had settlement house work, you had churches that were involved in the progressive movement, schools became involved in it, and it was just one of those magic times when, if I had to live in an era, I realized I would have wanted to live in that era. And I do think, at the beginning, it wasn't just Teddy that interested me, but the progressive era. If I had to find other times, I'd much rather be there during the New Deal or during the 60s and mm-hmm. or the progressive era than like 1920 or 1970 or 1980.
Now, what's interesting about, you know, especially Roosevelt as, you know, coming immediately after who the president, Karl Rove, modeled himself after most, McKinley, you know, that was their his ideal. And then you have juxtaposed to it, you have, I guess, the antithesis of everything he, you know, he's against. And so it's interesting that this is occurring during the Bush administration. But how did Roosevelt make such a break from his predecessor? Clearly, an assassin's bullet had something to do with it. But
no, exactly. So, and in fact, the reason that the, you know, people in power, the Marcanas of the world, put him into the vice presidency was hoping to just keep him away from power. You know, they feared him more as a second-term governor of New York than as vice president, and he himself felt like he had been shelved and was going to study law and thought his career was over until McKinley was shot, and of course he then becomes president. But he had realized, even as governor, that unless the Republican Party began to deal with some of the social problems of the era, that the party itself would be doomed. And indeed, he thought the nation would be doomed if we ended up with two parties, one of which was representing the conservative property owners and the other the wage workers and people who were more progressive. And so he saw the future in a certain sense. And also he was contending with socialism, which had become a stronger force then, so that he could argue to a center of the nation, you have to start taking these actions. If we do what McKinley and these others did, why, just claiming that laissez-faire is a religious fervor, we are going to hurt ourselves and the country.
Now, it's often said that, you know, his cousin, Franklin Roosevelt, saved capitalism by, you know, the measures taken during the Depression with the New Deal. But it sounds like you're also saying that Theodore may have saved capitalism as well.
You know, you're right. I hadn't thought about that, obviously, that famous quote about FDR, but I think that's true. I mean, it was pretty turbulent at the turn of the century. I mean, the strikes that were going on in the 1890s were quite violent. You know, labor was flexing its muscles, and there were boycotts, and there was, as I said, a fervor for socialism that was beginning to develop, and there was a fear of a revolution against the rich. And by taking those actions that he did, by finally getting regulation of the railroads, by breaking up some of the trusts, making things somewhat easier for women on the workplace, workman compensation, all of those measures, which are the foundation of much bigger measures that will be taking place during the New Deal. But it's interesting to think about, which I hadn't until your question, if he hadn't been able to do that, if McKinley had stayed in power, and then yet another McKinleyite was formed after that, then the pressure that was building up might well have produced somebody to really need to come in and save capitalism. And I think to some extent he took those first steps to protect capitalism himself before FDR did.
Now, the title of your book, The Bully Pulpit, is really, you know, stressing the importance of more or less developing a modern presidency in which the president can have power external from Congress and exert it on Congress. That, you know, sometimes we really probably haven't seen done effectively, maybe since Reagan.
I think that's right. I mean, what he was arguing then, and he defined the word bully then meant sort of splendid or great. It didn't mean what we commonly think of now as intimidation of the weak in any way. And pulp meant that you had a moral effect on the country. You could educate the country and move it to go forward. And in his day, you could have his whole speech in the newspaper. People would commonly talk about it together. And then even by, obviously, FDR's time, you've got 80% of the adult radio audiences listening in full to his fireside chats. And even by the television era of JFK up to Reagan, three networks, a president still has that power to project his desires in the country. Now with the fragmented news media, with people watch only their own cable stations and hearing maybe only excerpts of the speech and then having the pundit stare it down before it even gets finished, I think the bully pulpit itself has been diminished in its power.
Now, you worked in the Johnson administration during the last year or so, and, I mean, it's hard to imagine what tumultuous era would have been like had there been 24-hour news coverage.
Oh, that's absolutely. I mean, think about the marches in the streets even then during the anti-war demonstrations and how close to violence many of those were. And they then, of course, would be reported in the Chicago Convention. But if there had been, you know, if there had been Twitter, if there had been Facebook, if there had been phones that could take pictures of everything all along the way, the whole level of the, you know, of the clamor would have been so much greater. It's an extraordinary thought to think about it, because even then, you know, you would begin to have been able to come back at the president through outdoor media, but not anywhere near the access they would have to this kind of media today.
Right, but even Johnson was feeling the pressure, I mean, when he talked about losing Cronkite. And
that's right. I mean, that's right. That's the beginning. That's exactly right. I mean, when Cronkite on one of those three networks is able to talk about, you know, the fact that the country is getting to question the war, it spurred up what was already out there, a latent fear about the war. And also the Tet Offensive had a big role to play,
right,
in that as well. But that shows, that's right, that was one of those critical moments. But there's one person, isn't that amazing to think, who had that kind of, he had his own bully pulpit in a certain sense, Walter Cronkite did. Now it's almost like everybody has a megaphone, and that even when a president tries to exert control over the message that he's delivering, other people contradict it within moments. Even when President Obama was giving his health care speech, and then Joe Wilson, that congressman, yelled out, "You lie." So that becomes the story rather than the health care speech that year.
Yes. A very shocking moment. It turns out at the time I had an office in his district, and so I sent him a quote from Reagan that said, "In politics, it's a good profession. You can do some good, or if you embarrass yourself, you can always write a book." And I suggested he start writing his. But I figured he'd appreciate the quote from Reagan. But so going back to your book, it emphasizes the role that Roosevelt had with McClure's. And was McClure's in some ways akin to a Cronkite? Or because it was more associated with the progressive movement, it was really just kind of more just a movement periodical?
Well, you know, at the beginning, it didn't have as strong an ideological fervor that it developed as time went on. So it really followed the movement of the country and led the movement of the country. It was well respected, so that it's not like it was a partisan magazine, because its articles were so well researched, they were mini histories, and they were almost impregnable from attack. People never questioned or rarely questioned the facts that they presented. So in that sense, it had the credibility of a Cronkite in a certain sense, because people, even if they didn't agree with what was being put forward in those stories, they had to admit that the stories themselves had their own internal integrity, and they still stand up over time. I mean, that's what's amazing. You read Ida Tarbell's Standard Oil expose, or Ray Baker's expose about the railroads, or Lincoln Steffens about the corruption in the city, and they are lasting pieces of journalism over all these generations. So that gave it a believability and an honesty and an integrity, I think, that even though it was a progressive journalist, it had among the populace as a whole.
And these led to, you know, such monumental enactments as, you know, the Sherman Act and the FTC Act. And
that's what's extraordinary. That's right. You get real legislation as a result of the stories becoming so public that people demand that something should be done.
And what's interesting, you know, from our perspective, since we deal a lot with internet issues, is that the FTC Act you know, governs anything that's unfair or deceptive in interstate commerce. And it it celebrates its 100th anniversary next year. And it has been adaptable to maintain all and regulate, you know, the complex economy that has evolved far different from when it was first enacted.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's so, you know, even more stunningly when you think about the Constitution, you know, and the differences in the circumstances are just so wild from what it was the founders were creating. And yet sometimes there can be language or laws or amendments or original founding documents that are flexible enough that the later generations can still use them as a standard or a maxim, really, and then make it fit the needs of the time.
Now, I know you only have a little bit of time. The two areas I have to ask you about. One is, I went to three presidential libraries one year. It was the year of the Clinton Library. It was fun. It was the Clinton Library opening, and then I was in Austin, so I went to the Johnson Library, and when my company had a party at the Reagan Library. So, you know, all within 6 months of each other. Plus, I grew up in New England, so I've been to the Kennedy Library a zillion times. But it struck me in the Johnson Library. One, you know, historically, chronologically, it was built way before the iron payification of presidential libraries. And so, you know, it wasn't on that stature. But a couple of things struck me. One was the how small it was, and that, you know, Kennedy had this vast monument to 1,000 days, and Johnson, the whole Great Society was on one single wall. And it just made me think about, you know, the legacy of Johnson and, you know, Democrats in general versus Republicans with Reagan and communicating that legacy. And I started thinking about that, and then I got to the gift shop, and there was only one grown-up biography, which I believe was yours. Wow. and then some kids biographies of Johnson, and that was it. Whereas, you know, the Kennedy Museum is like
Of course. I mean, I'm sure there were dozens. I mean, it's a really interesting question. I mean, I think historically, historians are beginning to understand even more some of the lasting parts of LBJ's legacy. I mean, there's no question. There's three great civil rights laws, ending segregation in the South, the Voting Rights Bill, open housing, Medicare, aid to education. I mean, it's astonishing. The big question, of course, had there not been Vietnam, he would have been one of the great presidents. And I think we took for granted some of that legislation after it was passed. But now, looking back on it, it seems even more monumental than it did at the time. And people are beginning to recognize his extraordinary powers with the Congress and how he was able to get them to work on a bipartisan basis. So I think history will be kinder to him. There's a new play out called All the Way that Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad plays LBJ brilliantly. And it's just 1964, so it ends with his nomination, his election, but it's getting the Civil Rights Bill through the Congress. And it just brings him back to life again. So he's going to have a better run in history when some of the scars of the war in Vietnam, which may never be gone, but they will be less emotionally felt. And he deserves to have a better remembrance.
And also, I think part of the problem is the Johnson alumni are also Kennedy alumni. And I think some of them may choose one over the other, it seems.
Yeah, it was interesting, though. We went last Saturday night to a meeting of all the Kennedy people to celebrate the 50th anniversary at a White House staff, Nancy Dutton's house, and Linda Bird Johnson was there, and she actually sat next to me, and it was really nice because the Kennedy children spoke, Kathleen Kennedy and Teddy Kennedy Jr., and then she spoke as well about how obviously there have been all sorts of talk about the great tensions between the two, but in fact that she said they were both part of an era in the 60s when at least people were trying to deal with the government problems of the day and using government as a tool to help people toward more social justice. So it was a really quite moving moment at that time to realize, yes, there are these huge tensions, but yet they were both part of an era that is so much better in some ways than the era that we're living in right now.
Now, I used to work with Paul Warnke, who I don't know if you remember.
Oh, of course I know who he is, of course.
And he was a charming man. And I remember him telling me about seeing Babe Ruth at Fenway. And
wow.
Yeah, I was enthralled. And I saw your interview on KTLA last week, and you talking about being there when the Sox won a couple weeks ago. And that you thought about the fact this hadn't happened since 1918, and that there probably weren't a lot of people around from then. And, for me, my father died in 2003. And so when the Sox won in 2004, that was a big thing. And I remember reading the Boston Globe blog about, all these people thinking about those who weren't there that day.
Oh, yeah, going to grave sites and bringing some sort of memento to the parent or the grandparent who died. Absolutely.
Now, is that still present, now that we have three World Series out, since this is the first one at home?
Well, I think the fact that this was the first one at home gave it an extra dimension that nothing will probably ever parallel 2004 after all those years of losing year after year after year at the last minute, finally winning and winning over the Yankees in the way we did to get into the World Series. That was really special. But this one was almost as great because of being in Boston when it happened and because of being in the park that night, being able to sing with the people in your own hometown because of the marathon bombing thing having taken place. But there was a funny cartoon in a Boston paper the other day where it had somebody at a bar, downhearted, Red Sox hat on. Somebody went over and said, "What's the matter?" And he said, "I'm feeling like a New York Yankee." In other words, it's lost its glory. I don't think it's losing its glory. I could, I'd be glad to win every year. This summer was really special because this team was special. So was the 04 team. But they were really scrappy, except for Big Poppy. Somebody came through every other night. And you really loved the team. And I promised myself they made me so happy all summer because they won so many games that I would wake up in the next morning happy, that I wasn't going to be upset if they didn't do well in the playoffs or the World Series. I'm not sure I kept that promise when I got nervous during the playoffs and the World Series, but the whole summer was one of the happier baseball summers I've ever had.
It was a great year, that's for sure. And I know you have to go, but I want to thank you very much. It's been an honor
Thank you very much. You too, and I've been reading about you, so you're an interesting character.
Oh, thank you. Cheers and best of luck with your book tour.
Thank you very much.
Well, thanks again to Doris Kern-Gubin for being on the show, and thanks again for Miami Book Fair. A couple of things that if we only had a limited amount of time, and there were other things that I would have added, but I discovered an interesting quote by President Johnson, who she worked with and was her biographer of. He said, "Being president is like being a jackass in a hailstorm. There's nothing to do but stand there and take it." And LBJ was famous for being blunt, but it kind of talked about just you can see the sense of what Johnson was going through. He was in a very difficult, tumultuous era, and I guess he felt limited in what he could do. But at the same time, if you look at his legislative achievements, it is monumental. So Lyndon Johnson definitely is a giant in American history, and some may say that he maybe saved us from a second Civil War. But if you ever do get the chance in Austin, definitely go to the museum because it really is something to see. I recall there's a note from Jackie Kennedy to the President Johnson written the day after the assassination, just thanking him for his courtesy. And then, the other thing is, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, we know that happened, and we know what happened in 1964, but we forget it happened in January of 64. And there's a picture of the signing at that moment, and this is only 2 months after President Kennedy was killed. And you can see Bobby Kennedy in the audience looking like a ghost. So there's a lot of value to going to these presidential libraries. And you can learn a lot. You get a lot of insight beyond the history books. You get a sense of what the times were like. But there were some other things that I would have asked her about. And it's going to be interesting as going forward. Will it be harder to record presidential biographies? Given that we no longer write the long letters, we don't necessarily have, we have the extensive papers to review, and especially since will all this be cataloged? What happens to people's emails and thoughts? And so that's going to be interesting. We'll have to see how presidents deal, how we deal with that in the future. The other thing is, I was kind of wondering what her thought were about the various presidential rankings and, you know, how legitimate they are. You see a lot, you see some consistency among academics both here and abroad over who's considered some of the top and who's considered some of the worst. And so I don't know what her thoughts were on that. Roosevelt is an interesting character, but the one thing I thought about also was that history tends to focus on, you know, the presidents who are giants, and and those usually are two-term presidents for good reason, and or, you know, one and a half-term presidents because of, you know, an assassination, as was the case in Johnson. And what about, you know, the other presidents, you know, the Jimmy Carters, the George H.W. Bushes, the Fords, or even, you know, I know Truman's gotten a lot of attention, but, you know, he was kind of a one-term plus. What about them, and what can we learn from them? And especially since, to a certain extent, they're considered failures by some in history. And so, what can we glean from that failure? There are some people, and actually our next guest is probably going to talk a little bit about, the Carter administration and to what extent, maybe he is underrated. And I think the question, and I'm going to talk to Ralph in the second segment about that, is really the issue of legacies. And what is the role of a party in promoting and preserving that legacy? You know, I joke about, you know, the Republicans, and they were, zealous and, almost admirable adherence to promoting Reagan whenever they get a chance. I mean, they named everything after him except days of the week. And I probably shouldn't say that, since that may give them an idea that they haven't had. But the Democrats, I don't think, seem to do as good a job. And maybe it's because, the presidents ended with the presidencies ended with the parties fractured. You had Johnson with the war with Bobby Kennedy. You had Carter with the war with Ted Kennedy. And so maybe it's just presidents that have problems with Kennedys that the Democrats have problems with. But
Ben, I just wanted to go and jump in real quick and just mention, for those that, if they want to go, if they're in South Florida, then our area anyway, that want to go ahead and meet and get to see Doris speaking at the Miami Book Fair, I just want to make another mention of course, promotion here.
Please, she'll be speaking, when is that?
November 24th, so that's next Sunday, correct? Or excuse me, November 24th, and that's at 1:30 p.m., and she'll be at the Miami Book Fair 2013. You can find out more information at miamibookfair.com.
And if you go to her website, which is just thinkthisdorisgoodwin.com, yeah, it has doriskearnsgoodwin.com. It has her whole book tour, and it also has a number of interviews that she's had on TV interviews on this, and including The Daily Show, which was yesterday or the day before.
Yeah.
But the one to look at, actually, there's a CBS Sunday morning show, and it talks about how she got involved with Johnson. And it was interesting because she had actually, before getting hired, she had actually written a piece in the New Republic about how the Democrats can dump Johnson and go with another candidate. She didn't necessarily start off on the best foot with Johnson, but, he ultimately trusted her and made her his biographer. And I don't know if you're listening, President Clinton. I'm sure I think I can try to come up with something, but it was a great interview that she did there, and so definitely check her out. But yeah, please, if you see, these people are great person. She's a wonderful woman, great personality, and just sharp as a razor. And I would definitely encourage you to see her. She is a wealth of knowledge on the subject of presidencies
and Red Sox baseball.
And Reds, yes, and actually she was the first woman, female reporter in the locker room of Fenway Park. So, she's a diehard and a season ticket holder, which is actually, something very hard to come by these days. And so it's definitely, it's been a great time for those of us in Red Sox Nation, and we've been very blessed. And, so my hearts go out to whoever is now the Red Sox of baseball or sports. I don't know if it's the Cubs or the difference between the Red Sox and the Cubs, I think, is that the Red Sox will, the Red Sox won, but they just, you know, never quite got the championship. You know, they always tended to lose tragically. It was almost Shakespearean or, you know, something out of a Greek mythology. And so maybe there really isn't another Red Sox team out there that, of that history, but, you know, the Braves have had some collapses and, maybe the Indians, you know, they almost won once or twice. So, yes, but it's a fun time, and she's very interesting. And so also the other thing I'd recommend is look at, you know, look around you, depending on where you live. You may have a presidential library near you. You know, if you're in the South, you have Jimmy Carter's, and also you have the Bush libraries in Texas. If you're in the Northeast, obviously there's the Kennedy libraries. If you're in the West, you have Nixon's library. In the Midwest, you have Truman's Library and probably Eisenhower's as well. I forget where his is located. So they're great places to visit and learn a lot. Come back, we'll have Ralph Hollow, and he is the chief political columnist with the Washington Times and himself an author on presidential races. So we'll be back with Ralph Hollow after these messages.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
If you're constantly struggling to find more customers, revenue, or hours in the day, Infusionsoft can help you have the business you've always wanted. For over 10 years, Infusionsoft has been helping business owners just like you find the financial freedom and peace of mind you've been searching for.
I'm Scott Martineau, co-founder of Infusionsoft. If you're struggling to find more customers, more revenue, or more hours in the day, Infusionsoft is the proven solution you're looking for. Infusionsoft, the only all-in-one sales and marketing software created specifically for small businesses.
Learn more at www.infusionsoft.com/radio.
IRN USA Sports, I'm Jet Williams. LeBron James running white hot. LeBron James, 33 points in just three quarters. He watched the rest of the game during the fourth quarter from the bench. The Heat burned the Bucks 118-95 in South Beach. Elsewhere, the Mavericks dribble past the Wizards 105-95. Warriors take the spark out of the Pistons, 113-95. The Lakers sans Kobe.
Building better search engine rankings takes the right formula. Tracking those rankings is super simple.
All you need is AuthorityLabs.com.
Authority Labs uses automated daily rank tracking tools to monitor your site's performance or leverage their API to build your own tools. No matter what animal-labeled algorithms affect your ranking,
you should be using Authority Labs.
Unlimited users for no additional cost and white labeling can help keep your clients updated and save countless hours of creating reports. Whether you're running sites with just a few or millions of keywords,
what you need is AuthorityLabs.com.
Guys, are you suffering from FD, fulfillment dysfunction? Let MoldingBox.com's online portal system for inventory, tracking, and returns perform for you. We have the enormous tools you need for complete warehousing, shipping, and handling of all your packages, no matter the size or shape, directly to your customers. MoldingBox.com can also fulfill all your nourishing, nutraceutical, and smooth skincare product desires, including green coffee and Garcinia, on demand. Plus, let our in-house printing and CD-DVD manufacturing help you enlarge and maximize your coaching and business opportunity potential. We do everything. Fulfillment, shipping, tracking, inside and out, and all in one place. MoldingBox.com. It's shipping made sexy.
Hold on to your white hat or black hat. WebmasterRadio.fm is ready to take you behind the backlinks. We're digging and scraping past the surface of everyday news and views of search engine marketing and dropping our proverbial anchor text on the important issues affecting the industry with our panel of search engine insiders. Behind the Backlinks.
Tuesdays at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific.
On demand, anytime, inside the Search Engine Optimization Channel, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report, only on WebmasterRadio.fm.
And we're back. This is Bennett Kelly with Cyber Law and Business Report. And I recognize that, you know, the title of the show is Cyber Law and Business Report, but we were given a special bounty with the help of the Miami Book Fair and getting us Doris Kearns Goodwin. So we thought we'd pair the show with another kind of presidential observer and someone of a similar stature. And we have Ralph Hollow, who is the chief political columnist for the Washington Times, and it has been named Conservative Columnist of the Year, and who I is famous for doing short distance races in Albuquerque. But Ralph, are you with us?
Yes, I'm in Albuquerque. My race is over. Okay, I can talk. What? What an introduction. Never in my life. By the way, where is Albuquerque?
Albuquerque, it's the airport below Santa Fe.
Yes. Okay. All right, so listen, your first question, who am I speaking with again?
This is Bennett.
Well, we all have our crosses to bear. Anyhow, your first question to me, Mr. Bennett.
Yes, my first question to you is, Ralph, first of all, welcome to the show. And we were talking with Doris Kearns Goodwin, and off the air, you were talking about presidents, and you had some insights about Jimmy Carter. And would you like to tell us about what you think about Jimmy Carter and how, he's kind of ignored?
Yeah, he is. I mean, Republicans dismiss Carter as this wimpy liberal who never did anything right. Democrats won't even talk about him. I mean, it's the weirdest thing. And his presidency was significant in a number of ways. He accomplished a lot, but some of the most important things he accomplished aren't in the Democratic Party's pantheon of great ideas. He did more for the deregulation of energy, for example, than any president ever in the history of this country. He did more for the deregulation of airlines than any president, than any other president. For trucking, in a sense, he was the free market president. It's the weirdest thing. I'm talking with him one morning at breakfast, and I say, Mr. President, this is long after he was president. How come you never take credit for the magnificent deregulation that you effected as president? And he squirmed. He didn't want to talk about it.
Wow.
It's as if it's. I was saying that Mr. Carter, this is the hallmark of your presidency. People have been talking about the stupidity of overregulation in the United States, that there is no competition, monopolies in all of these industries, the airlines, everything. And you actually did something about it. I don't understand why you don't want to talk about it. And he must have tried five times to change the subject. And I remember somebody told me. A knowledgeable, very knowledgeable Democrat told me that the problem was that it was Ted Kennedy.
Yes,
his problem was with Ted Kennedy, and Ted Kennedy was. I think most people don't even know this. Kennedy's had a lot of front groups that were designed, dedicated to deregulation, deregulating this, deregulating that, and some not terribly well-informed liberals think, well, that's conservative. That's not liberal. Well, it's neither liberal nor conservative. It's just common sense.
Right.
But since these were Kennedy operations, Carter doesn't want to talk about them. Now, there's a lot of things I don't know that go on this planet, and even more things I don't understand. But that one I really don't understand. Why would Carter not want to talk about his signal achievements in this area just because they were associated with Ted Kennedy? And by the way, nobody associates him with Kennedy. You know.
Right.
That's very few people, other people know, right?
And it's interesting because, I was very much involved in that whole Kennedy-Carter war. I remember I was counting down the days in November until Kennedy announced in 1979. I got ahead of myself, and actually volunteered as part of the Kennedy campaign, and I was staunchly anti-Carter. And then I came to Washington after Reagan won, and I had all that time period to reflect on maybe the wisdom of being so anti-Carter during that era. And I'm also just I mentioned the quote off the air about being president is like being a jackass in a hailstorm. There's nothing to do but stand there and take it. Johnson said that, and how in some ways Carter very much resembled that, because some of the things really weren't in his control. The hostage crisis, for example, or the oil shocks from the embargo. Or even the ripple effects from the ending wage and price controls from the Nixon administration. It seemed that he kind of just walked into a storm, and maybe the problem was is he wasn't. I believe in some countries they have parliamentary systems. They have a president and a prime minister, and the prime minister is the ceremonial. The president is the ceremonial head, and the prime minister is the legislative head. And in terms of an American example, Reagan was a master president in the prime minister type of analogy. And Carter never understood that second role. And maybe had he done that better, he would have weathered the storm and it not seemed so much like a jackass.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right on that. But I also think that among the presidents who are in that hall of greatness, Reagan ranks way up there. Everybody did. But he... There is no such Reagan. There was the Reagan that has been put on that pedestal never existed.
Right, just like the Kennedy on the other side.
Yes, right. Except that Kennedy is credited with fewer achievements simply because he wasn't in office that long. One of his great achievements people talk about legitimately was his across-the-board tax cut, which was followed by economic growth. And so people say that that's what caused it, and it probably did. Because, economics is not a science. It's probably true. But that's about it. I mean, the crisis over the missiles in Cuba, ultimately, I think, was most people would agree, was handled very well. I think it was genius. Other than that, there wasn't much to the Kennedy first term.
A thousand days.
First term.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But Reagan served two terms.
Yes.
And you ask your average citizen, or particularly a Republican, what was great about Reagan? One of the first things an informed person would tell you is, well, his first year in office, 1981, he got through Congress and signed the most sweeping tax cut in the history of America, 25% across the board, income tax, business tax, everything, 25% over 3 years. And then his second term, first year of his second term, he got through the most sweeping tax reform in American history, where he reduced that act. Legislation reduced the number of tax brackets, depending on how you cut it, they were either 18 or 22, to
right.
Two.
Yes.
That was incredible. Absolutely incredible. That's fine. But people don't remember that he signed and was really a part of behind the scenes the largest tax increase in the history of America. It remains, Bennett, it remains the largest, adjusted for inflation.
Yes.
Yeah. So
ironic.
Reagan did a lot of strange things. I mean, he did good things and he did bad things from a perspective. Let's say from a better conservative perspective. So what American conservatives understandably remember is the good, from their point of view, the good stuff.
And exactly.
The bad stuff has disappeared from the brain cell.
Well, we're going to take a short break.
Nature.
Ralph, I'm going to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about the promotion of the Reagan legacy and whether Democrats aren't as good at promoting their own heroes. After these messages, we'll be back with Ralph Hallow, the chief political columnist for the Washington Times.
Stay tuned for more of the Cyber Law and Business Report after this brief recess for our sponsors.
I'm John Ball, and I'm one of the founders of Page One Power. Page One Power is a custom link building firm based in Boise, Idaho. We increase search rankings and web traffic for world-class brands and mom-and-pop shops all around the globe. Our link building strategies work because we focus on relevancy and quality, and we don't outsource anything. Our in-house staff of professional writers and researchers is the best in the industry. We're the link builders you've been looking for. Visit us today at pageonepower.com.
Ever wondered how you could have access to your own SEO expert, paid search specialist, or social media wizard? Looking for help with your affiliate, display media, or email marketing?
Look no further than the folks at Fang Digital Marketing.
Fang Digital specializes in both paid and organic search, social media, display, and mobile advertising solutions, and is staffed by industry veterans from Google, Yahoo,
and one of the industry's most influential PPC experts.
Fang Digital's award-winning staff stays on top of the latest in digital trends and offer tailored solutions so they can audit your progress and build a roadmap to your success. Learn more about their expanding range of full-service strategic marketing solutions at fangdigital.com. That's FANGdigital.com.
Oh, yeah. My day is done. Time for happy hour.
You're already done for the day?
Yeah, because I use CertifiedKnowledge.org. Their PPC tools literally save me hours every day.
How do you keep on top of all of Google's new features?
Easy. With Certified Knowledge, their interactive learning modules keep me up to date. And if there's something I don't know, I can watch their video lessons without having to hunt around the Google help files.
Great. I'm ready to expand my knowledge.
Hi, I'm Brett Geddes. I'm the only leader officially supported by Google to teach the advanced track of the AdWords Seminars for Success. I personally recommend CertifiedKnowledge.org as your one-stop shop for all your PPC needs.
Learn, optimize, connect. Be smart. Go to CertifiedKnowledge.org now.
Your mission, initiate internet marketing measures. Your arsenal, the weapons of mass marketing.
Weapons of mass marketing. On demand anytime inside the Internet Marketing Channel. Only on webmasterradio.fm.
The best gavel-to-gavel legal news and information on the net is right here. This is the Cyber Law and Business Report. Only on webmasterradio.fm.
And we're back, and we're talking to Ralph Hallow. He's the chief political columnist with Washington Times. And, Ralph, you were talking about Reagan and how he still has the largest tax increase in history. And it's interesting because I understand that Obama apparently has the largest tax cut in history. And so would you be, again, both perceptions the exact opposite of what people think. Now, Reagan, the Republicans do a great job about promoting Reagan. Now, how would you consider, how would the Democrats do with their heroes? Do you think maybe it's because their heroes are flawed, they don't promote them as well, or...
No, I don't think it has anything to do with the flaws. There is no administration in the history of the planet anywhere, not just the United States, that wasn't highly flawed.
Well, maybe William Benjamin Harrison.
Right, or somebody on Facebook that said, you're not considering President McKenzie. He was assassinated. President who?
I think he meant McKinley.
Yes. They say American education has its imperfections. I guess so. The administration is the people. The people.
Yes.
And people have human nature. Human nature is flawed. But I think the best job in modern history of promoting the image of a president was John F. Kennedy.
Yes.
The Kennedy family did an absolutely marvelous job. Now, they were working with someone who was exceptionally attractive as a person, a man who had everything going. I mean, photogenic, charm coming, oozing out of every pore, sense of humor. He had everything. And a gorgeous wife with real class. You I said, what more could you ask? I mean, he's a smart guy. So if you listen, if you remember, you're probably too young. But his press conferences were things that I rushed to the radio or the TV to hear, simply because they were so good. I mean, he actually made a press conference fascinating. Now, you tell me another president. You can't.
No, I mean, I've seen his press conferences at the library, and they're funny. I mean, I remember one line about, you know, do you recommend a job to others? And of course, he said no.
he just quick on the uptake, damn it. He was so, and yet we all know his flaws.
Yes.
So the answer to your question is, do Democrats promote their presidents as well as Republicans promote their presidents? It really does depend on the president. Johnson, during his presidency, for a while was over-promoted. And he wound up being being hated by, or strongly disliked, hatred is a bit strong, strongly disliked by Democrats,
right,
by liberals. I remember covering, this was a long time ago, I covered some convention, state party convention, Democratic convention somewhere, maybe, I forget where. And I noted that Lyndon Johnson, he was president, Lyndon Johnson's name was not mentioned once. This is a state party convention, perhaps Pennsylvania. And I remember I did a piece for Time or Newsweek, I forget which I noted that this is probably a sign of something to come, that the president of the United States is not mentioned by people in his own party at a state party convention. Well, it wasn't too long after that that Johnson let us know that he wasn't going to take the second term.
Right.
And so there wasn't much you could do with Johnson. We've already talked about Jimmy Carter. Bill Clinton... I don't know. Let me ask you, if you don't mind if I ask the host question, right? Okay.
Please.
How do you feel Bill Clinton got? Did he get adequate promotion, do you think?
Did he get adequate promotion? I would like to see if just as I fly into Washington and I fly into Reagan National Airport. I mean, I would like to see a Clinton airport. I'd like to see him promoted more. I mean, granted, yes, I was really furious about Monica Lewinsky, but on balance, I thought he was a great president. And
that's not what I mean. He's going to be Republicans and Democrats and independents are beginning to recognize his presidency as overall a pretty good one. As the years pass, that will be increasingly the case, I predict. He did screw himself up badly. That was not an accidental word choice. Because he got involved with Lewinsky and had all these sex scandals, all of which was decided, as far as I'm concerned, beside the point. What did he do in the White House that related to the American economic and political system and American foreign policy? He did some stupid things, and he did a lot of good things. I think he is responsible for the longest sustained economic expansion in our history. Reagan is credited with that normally, but I think
I think it's at least post-war. I'm not sure if it's our history, but yeah. But
well,
we only
okay.
have. We only have a few minutes left, Ralph. So if people wanted to look you up and read your brilliant insight, where should they go?
They should go see me in the hospital, which is where I think I'm headed. Andy, that's really, really, really lousy. The way to go is WashingtonTimes.com. Or more directly, type in your subject line on your computer, Ralph, Z as in Zachary, Hallow, H-A-L-L-O-W. And billions and billions of citations will come up. And you could type in something that's current. You know, if everybody's talking about Benghazi, type in that. You know, the usual kind of thing you do when you Google. By the way, Google is a legitimate verb now.
It is. I think it's in the OED. But we got to run, Ralph. Yeah. I want to thank you very much. I appreciate you jumping on and being a good sport, and give my best to Millie. And as always, thanks again. And I want to thank the listeners for our special presidential edition, and also to Miami Book Fair for all their help in getting this together. So join us next week for Cyber Law and Business Report. Court is adjourned. Have a great week.
This has been a presentation of WebmasterRadio.fm, the world's largest business-to-business radio and podcast network. We welcome you to sample past episodes of this program, as well as our complete library of programs, on demand or on the air via our 24/7 live audio stream at www.webmasterradio.fm. The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm's management or sponsors. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without authorized consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.